the first three quarters of this year, we're studying through Exodus. So this is our ninth lesson in this quarter. Ben Tarman covered the first quarter of Moses's life, and so we'll get into that in just a second. Thank you for everybody for being here. Great to see familiar faces and some visitors. We're happy to have you this morning. Before we dive in, we take some time every once in a while to kind of review this timeline, and it's just a big, broad timeline, big picture idea. So what is roughly at 4000 BC? Adam and Eve. So then we have about 1500 years, and that is what? About 2500. The flood, I heard somebody say it. And then another 500 years is who? God gives the promises to whom? Abraham. Then our section that we're studying this year at 1500 is Moses and the law, or the first part of the law. And then another 500 years, who do we have after that? David, yeah. And then at zero, who do we have? Jesus. And then we have us roughly 2,000 years later. So this is good framework for the biblical story in context, but not exact time frames. But then if we zoom in on the 1500 time frame, we get the life of Moses. So what I said, Ben covered the first 80 years in our first quarter. We're covering a very short period of time this quarter. And then Moses, Oren, will cover the rest of the time with Moses and starting the wandering in the wilderness and the rest of the law that God gives at Mount Sinai. Today, so we're going to talk about God's first giving of the law, or the law in summary, like I like to call it. And it's regarding worship to him, like a corporate worship to him. We'll talk a little bit about God's laws on slavery and servants within Israel, laws surrounding the death penalty, and then I bucket the rest of them of communal laws, so laws within the community. But before we go there, I've asked Dakin to lead us in a prayer.
Our glorious Heavenly Father, we're so grateful for the privilege we have to be at this place at this time, to join with others that love you and want to know what your word says to us, so that we may prepare ourselves to obey your word, resist sin, and more importantly, to spread your good news so that others may hear it and understand the hope and happiness that we have within us. Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Amen. All right, so to lay the groundwork for where we're at right now. So last week we studied Exodus 19 or Exodus 20, and God coming down on Mount Sinai, and the Ten Commandments is the big one, and we called that the framework. So the Ten Commandments kind of lay out the framework for the rest of the law. In this last week, we talked about the people trembling before God as the thunder and lightning and smoke and the earthquaking and all of that, the people's response to that. They trembled in fear, and they said, Moses, you talk to God. We don't want to hear his voice because we might die. That's quickly followed up by Moses saying, don't be afraid. And I don't think it's, we talked last week a little bit about, that's probably not a like fear as in I'm scared, but a fear of God so that they don't sin. So there should be a healthy fear to God. God is powerful. God is mighty. And the people trembled in that fear. Then the last piece we talked about, we spent a good deal of discussion time on it, which I think was very, very good and very healthy, that we talked about the Ten Commandments applied in principle today. Not the law being held today, but the principles of that can be applied today. And some of those are directly quoted in the New Testament. So, any comments on last week? Otherwise, we'll jump into our text for this week. All right. So, I'm going to read the first page. We're going to break this into two readings because that's a lot of reading. And I'll be up here for a long time reading. The people stayed at a distance, and Moses came near to the thick darkness where God was. Yahweh said to Moses, "This is what you shall tell the children of Israel. You yourselves have seen it, that I have talked with you from heaven. You shall most certainly not make gods of silver or gods of gold for yourself to be alongside me. You shall make an altar of earth to me, and shall sacrifice on it burnt offerings and your peace offerings, your sheep and your cattle. In every place where I record my name, I will come to you and I will bless you. If you make an altar of stone, you shall not build it out of cut stones, for if you lift up your tool on it, you have polluted it. You shall not go up by steps to my altar, that your nakedness may not be exposed on it. Now, these are the ordinances which you shall set before them. If you buy a Hebrew servant, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh year he shall go out free without paying anything. If he comes in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he is married, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master gives him a wife, and she bears him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself. But if the servant shall plainly say, 'I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free,' then his master shall bring him to God, and shall bring him to the door or the doorpost, and his master shall bore his ear through with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. If a man sells his daughter to be a female servant, she is not to go out as the male servants do. If she doesn't please her master who has married her to himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He shall have no right to sell her to a foreign people, since he has dealt deceitfully with her. If he marries her to his son, he shall deal with her as a daughter. If he takes another wife to himself, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, or her marital rights. If he does not do these things for her, she may go free without paying any money. One who strikes a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death, but not if it is unintentional, but God allows it to happen. Then I will appoint you a place where he shall flee. If a man schemes and comes presumptuously on his neighbor to kill him, you shall take him from my altar, and he may die. That he may die. Anyone who attacks his father or mother shall surely be put to death. Anyone who kidnaps someone and sells him, or if he is found in his hand, he shall surely be put to death. If anyone who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death." So with that, I think the first part that we read here is God telling them how he wants to be worshipped. And so I asked you the question, is this is kind of the initial instructions on God's desire to be worshipped. And so what are the people not to do? Yeah, so a little foreshadowing there. They're not to make idols or images of silver or gold. But what are they to do? Yeah, altar out of what, though? Earth? Stone, okay, so earth or stone. And then maybe the point I want to spend a little more time on is, where is that? I think there's an important distinction here between what has happened in the past and what's happening going forward. Yeah, so baked into that is God is choosing the place. I think what we've seen in the past is typically the patriarchs have either chosen the place, or it's a place where something miraculous has happened and they build an altar. It's not God necessarily choosing where that is, but it's where they have something and they want to honor God, they have chose the place. Now it's God shifting that. It's not men choosing the place. It is God choosing the place. Just like God said to Moses, bring the people here. This is where I want you to be. It's not where man is. Other thoughts on the worship instructions to the people? Absolutely. Other thoughts? All right. So, yeah, those are kind of the last two points I was looking at. It was like, if it is God making the item. So God made the earth, God made the stones. If I change it, I now have polluted it. And so it is God. It's a heavy emphasis on God doing, not man doing. And then the revealing the nakedness. And so with that revealing of the nakedness, there, when I was reading through it and doing a little study around this, I think there's a callback to the Garden of Eden also, is when man sins, he realizes his nakedness and his vulnerability before God, and he covers himself. God is reaffirming that, like, hey, sin is here. This is wrong. Nakedness is wrong now, because man brought sin into the world. And so God is making provisions that man is covered and holy before God, at least in this context here. Other thoughts? All right. So we make a shift. So that first section was the end of chapter 19. We begin chapter 20. And kind of the title of the lesson is God gives his ordinances to the people. And so the first one he goes to is slavery. So I'm going to take just one second here to draw some context around this authorization, because God is authorizing slavery. Like, we can't say God doesn't authorize it. It clearly states that he does. But this is in the context of the Hebrew nation under the law. It is not slavery that we had in our country. Those are two totally separate things. So I think that's one point, that as we're going through all these laws, I want to make clear that we can't apply one for one. We are not the Hebrew nation. We're Gentiles. So we're not under this law, what we called out last week. And so God is making provisions for this to happen within the Hebrew nation, and that is what he's talking about here. So very hard to, because as I'm going through this and preparing, I want to put my life as it is today in that situation. I have to keep pulling myself back from that, because this, the Hebrew or Israelite slavery, is not applicable to me today. So, but I think it's, we'll draw some parallels of understanding that we can gain out of that. So, in the case of male slaves, what does God kind of instruct Israel to do? Yeah, Anthony?
Well, the first thing he does is he puts a time bound on the length of your slavery. And with it being 6 years and the 70 should go free, it sounds a lot like using the Sabbath concept, where you're working for a time and then now you've got this freedom after the work is done.
Yeah, great, great point. Other thoughts? That concept goes throughout. God keeps that similar theme throughout. Other thoughts on male slavery and the purpose behind it, maybe? You can share your thoughts. Yeah, Oren? Great point, and definitely one I wanted to bring out is both parties in this situation know the rules. It's not like I don't know the rules and I'm going to get into this situation and then be trapped forever. Everybody knows what is expected. So I think there's a very clear line that God is drawing there. Other thoughts? So there was an element of, could be to relieve debts, what Oren brought up, and then that the concept of this could be lifelong employment for somebody. If you're in a not a great situation, or you get into this situation, you get married, have children, because if you come in free, it says clearly you go out by yourself. It doesn't, you don't come in, get married, and then your whole family comes out. The wife and the children are the masters. And so you have to, the man who is in that situation, he would have to redeem them out of slavery, which would be probably a very high cost to a man who got into the situation because he was in debt. So he comes out with basically nothing, and his debt is clear. Other thoughts on male slaves? We'll get into female slaves next. All right. So, female slaves. What is the context? What's the purpose around female slavery? Yeah, because I'm in the same boat. It is very different. I'll let somebody else talk. I don't want to share all my information. Other thoughts there? It's a good point, Anthony. We'll come back to it.
Well, maybe I'll also ask
all right, go for it.
The whole purpose
with this, and I think you're spot on. So it is for the purpose of typically marriage, either to the master or to his son, and carries that through and makes it very clear. And there is an element of this is a very vulnerable situation in this society, in this situation, and God makes it clear you can't sell her. Like, you can't give her to a foreign nation. Like, that's, this is what I said earlier. This is the context of Hebrew national slavery or servanthood. Like, this is not, hey, I can buy and sell people at will. This is supposed to be within the Israelite nation. In the context of the master having her marry his son, treat her as a daughter. She becomes part of your family at that point. And then kind of where Anthony was going is if he does take another wife, you can't take away her privileges or her rights within that marriage bound. So it is lifetime care for the woman also. Other thoughts there, Kurt?
This is kicked off by a man who sells his daughter.
Yes.
He's got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
He's in debt. I assume that's why he's doing it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So, go ahead.
I'm reading this, and what year is it, 2023? It's just hard to read. It's just hard to understand, especially as you mentioned at the beginning, how we feel about slavery. I agree, it is a totally different scenario. I was thinking about that this morning. And the differences in the slave trade and the history of our country in Europe,
mm-hmm.
anyway, not just the U.S.
Yes.
But it's just hard for us to take that a man would get himself in a position where he feels like he has to sell his daughter to someone to get himself out of the situation.
Yeah.
But since it was happening, God was going to put rules on it to make sure people were taken care of,
mm-hmm.
and not treated poorly.
Yeah, exactly. Good point. Yes. That is a fantastic point, because it is hard to separate our knowledge of slavery in our country and other parts of the world where it is like I'm buying a piece of property. This is, God is very clear, this is not property. Like, it's a person. You're buying a person, and you treat that person with dignity and respect. And so where I took this in trying to apply it in some way to our world today is, I put in the context of a contractor. I hire somebody, we both know the terms of the agreement, to complete a job. Usually a house doesn't take 7 years to build, but who knows. I hire that contractor, he knows the rules, he knows what I want to build, I'm paying him, but in this context, they wouldn't be paid, they'd be paying off a debt. And so that contractor would build whatever for me, we would complete that, and he would be free to go somewhere else. And so I know that's a loose application, but it at least made sense in my mind when I try to pair it together. Levi? Because God had to provide them with what to do in these situations. So one place I want to go with this is where Jesus talks about it. And we talked about it on Wednesday nights. It's been a little bit ago. But I put it in the side part of the notes. Luke 12:42. And so it's Jesus making an application similar to this. So Luke 12, starting in 42 through 48. And the Lord said, who then is the faithful and wise manager whom his master will set over his household to give them their portion of food at the proper time? Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. But if that servant says to himself, my master is delayed in coming, and begins to beat male and female servants, and eat and drink and get drunk, the master of the servant will come on a day which he does not expect him, and at an hour he does not know, and he will cut him in pieces and put him with the unfaithful. And the servant who knew his master's will, but did not get ready for the action according to his will receive a severe beating. But the one who did not know and did what was deserved of a beating will receive a light beating. Everyone whom much was given, to him will be required, and from whom they entrust much, they will demand the more. And so Jesus is talking about that master-servant relationship, and I think that's a call back to God's will, is the servant should be doing what the master asks and doing it well. And then there's also the application of we are servants to Christ, and we have to do what God wills. So, yes, this is not in our world today, but there's an element of we will have a Sabbath at some point. We will be with God in rest. And so all of these, I think if we take them and apply principle into the New Testament, is we have a duty. We have a duty to God to serve him, and he is our master, and he will provide for us. All right, other thoughts on slavery? Keep moving on here. All right. So the death penalty. So again, kind of the Clayton's point is, this is not God saying, hey, just these things happen and you put them to death. Sin occurs. This is the consequence of sin. So maybe the question I ask is, why are there so many laws that surround the death penalty? Levi? So at a very high level, I think it's God is putting an emphasis on human life. Like, yes, you must respect human life. If you don't, this is the consequence. I think that's very clearly what he's laying out. If you take a life, your life will be demanded. And so there's an element a little later in our reading where an animal takes a life, but that's a different situation, I think, in the death penalty realm. And I think this is also a call back to Genesis 1, is God is a respecter of life because we're created in his image. God didn't just arbitrarily make us. He said, let us make man and woman in our image. And so we're a representation of God. And if you take a life, God demands a penalty for that. In context of what we're reading right now, what about the Ten Commandments? So he's making a tie back to the Ten Commandments, right? So if you take a life or if you break one of these laws, you're breaking one of God's laws that he laid out as the framework. So there's the element of you shall not murder. If I murder somebody, God demands my life. Also, we are to honor father and mother. Like that also is in the Ten Commandments. And God is very clear. If you don't, if you curse them or strike or attack, yeah, you're to be put to death. So there is an emphasis on respect up the chain. So respect your father and mother, respect God, and respect what he has laid out. More general application, I think, is the honoring of God and then also following through with the framework of his law. So I think that's where he's going with this. Other comments on death penalty? All right. We'll read our second section this morning. So the back page. If men quarrel and one strikes the other with a stone or his fist and he does not die but is confined to bed, if he rises again and walks around with his staff, then he who struck him shall be cleared. Only he shall pay for the loss of his time and shall provide for his healing until he is thoroughly healed. If a man strikes his servant or his maid with his rod and he dies under his hand, the man shall surely be punished. Notwithstanding, If his servant gets up after a day or two, he shall not be punished, for the servant is his property. If men fight and hurt a pregnant woman so that she gives birth prematurely, and yet no harm follows, he shall surely be fined as much as the woman's husband demands and the judges allow. But if any harm follows, then you must take life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, and wound for wound, and bruise for bruise. If a man strikes his servant's eye or his maid's eye and destroys it, he shall let him go free for his eye's sake. If he strikes out his male servant's tooth or his female servant's tooth, he shall let the servant go free for the sake of his tooth. If a bull gores a man or a woman to death, the bull shall surely be stoned, and its meat shall not be eaten, but the owner of the bull shall not be held responsible. If the bull had a habit of goring in the past, then he shall be, and this has been testified to its owner, and he has not kept it in, but it has killed a man or a woman, the bull shall be stoned, and the owner shall also be put to death. If a ransom is imposed on him, then he shall give for the redemption of his life whatever is imposed. Whoever it has gored a son or a daughter, according to this judgment, it shall be done to him. If a bull gores a male servant or a female servant, 30 shekels of silver shall be given to the master, and the ox shall be stoned. If a man opens a pit, and if he digs a pit and does not cover it, and a bull or donkey falls into it, the owner of the pit shall make it good. He shall give money to its owner, and the dead animal shall be his. If one man's bull injures another's so that it dies, then they shall sell the live bull and divide its price, and they shall divide the dead meat. Or, if it is known that the bull was in the habit of goring in the past, and its owner has not kept it in, he shall surely pay for the bull. The dead animal shall be his own. So we shift away, and so I ask the question in the context of this is, what, at the point when Jesus comes to the earth, what would Israel know about the law, an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth, in summary? But they have a pretty good knowledge of that. And so, for sake of time, I'm not going to turn to it, but in Leviticus 24, verses 17 through 22, there's an application there that it's this rule is applied equally across the people. Like, there's no partiality. If this happens, you're demanded whatever the consequence is. Also, in Deuteronomy 19 through 21, the purpose of it is to remove evil from Israel. So I think by the time Jesus comes around, they have a very deep knowledge of God's law, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, burn for burn, so on. But there is an exception of manslaughter where God says if it's unintentional, there's a place you can go. We learn later that it's a sanctuary city. And so this is murder. This is purposeful. I'm attempting to hurt or kill somebody, and God has rules for that. If it's accidental, I have a place to flee and be safe, but it's essentially lifetime sentence for that person in that city. So, but what about this law and us today? That's where I want to talk this morning, is what should we do in context of this law being given to Israel? I think this is human nature. So, what should we do, Oren?
Well, Jesus is with them.
Yeah.
So, they came to understand this as love your neighbor, hate your enemy. Like, that's how they translated this. Like, this is a retribution, so I'm supposed to hate that person. But Jesus says, no, you're not supposed to hate your enemy, you're supposed to love your enemy.
Matthew 5:38-48, roughly. So you have heard it said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. And then if we skip down, you have heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. So when you put those two things in contrast, Jesus is laying out what we should do. That would be difficult for the Israelites to hear, the Jews of the day. What else? What other thoughts do you have? Yeah, Anthony?
Well, this is this chapter is the basis of our Western court system. You know, it has been for over 1,000 years, that you take responsibility for your actions and how they affect your neighbor, as well as how your property affects your neighbor. It's not about getting revenge on a personal basis, it's about the civil court system. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
In the New Testament, the life that is given is that of Christ.
Yes. Great point. Is I no longer have to seek a life. Jesus has given that life for the sin that which I commit. Great point. Close this out this morning quickly. So I group the rest of the laws within this chapter as kind of community-based law. So so Anthony hit on it, is like this is a basis for law going forward throughout many societies, and it's essentially take care of what you own. Laws of servants and slaves and what you should do in those situations. He laid out, if a bull or ox hurts someone or something, you have to pay for it or your life is demanded of you if you didn't take care of your own property. And then the actions resulting in property damage, I'm responsible for making the person that I harmed whole, either paying for it or giving them something or making that happen. And so overall, all this that we talked about this morning is, I think, the main purpose of what God is getting at is valuing human life and taking care of what God has blessed us with. If we can go away with that, I think we will fulfill God's law and laws and principles. All right. Thank you.